Okay. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm Judge Gaitis. I'm joined today by Chief Judge Susan Siegel and Judge Renee Werke. And we are ready to proceed on the Zoom platform with our second case of the day. This is Leanne Wilburn versus Creative Homes, Inc., case number A20-1595. Attorneys, I just want to let you know that your arguments are being recorded this morning and will be available for viewing on our website a little later. Just a few ground rules before we hear your arguments. I would ask you both to please introduce yourselves and identify the party you are representing before you begin your argument. I'd also ask that you be mindful of the time limitations on your arguments this morning. The appellant will have 15 minutes, respondent will have 15 minutes, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal argument if appellant chooses to use that 5 minutes at the end. We do have a clock keeping track of the time this morning. Can you both see the clock okay, counsel? Okay. And with that, we are ready to get started with your arguments. We will first hear from counsel for appellant. You may proceed.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Racy Rodney, attorney for appellant Leanne Wilburn. This is a fall on ice case that was dismissed on summary judgment through the open and obvious doctrine. This matter must be overturned because there are factual disputes at each level of the open and obvious doctrine analysis that must be presented in front of a jury. Since this matter was dismissed on summary judgment, the court reviews this matter de novo. The issues presented in front of the court are whether the district court erred in applying the open and obvious doctrine analysis, whether the ice that appellant slipped on is actually visible, and whether respondent should have anticipated that appellant Wilburn would have entered the for sale home and traversed the dangerous hazard. In regard to the open and obvious doctrine analysis, we ask this court to follow the Minnesota Supreme Court case Lewis v. Lewis, which states that if the court concludes the danger was known or obvious as a matter of law, it must then decide whether the landowner should nevertheless have anticipated the harm despite its known or obvious danger. Using this analysis, we have two factual disputes. The first being whether the ice is objectively visible. The second being whether respondent should have anticipated that appellant Wilburn would have traversed or negotiated the sidewalk to enter and exit the for sale home. In the first part of the open and obvious analysis, we have a fact question of whether the ice is objectively visible. And the specific question is whether a reasonable person would have seen the dangerous hazard or ice when she is leaving the home, walking down three stairs and encountering the ice on the landing below.
What creates the fact issue there? Where is the fact issue? Because we've got, in the record that at least after the fact, your client saw the ice, her husband saw the ice. And on the way in, knew it was a sidewalk, knew it was winter, saw packed snow, tried to avoid that. If we're just looking at what creates the genuine issue of material fact here?
The facts in this case that could lead a reasonable person to believe that the ice is not visible, which would create the fact issue, I think are appellant Wilburn's testimony that she didn't see the ice when she walked in. Her husband's testimony that he didn't see the ice when he walked in. Appellant Wilburn's testimony that she actually didn't see the ice until she investigated what caused her to fall. Similar to how subsequent remedial measures do not equal an admission against interest, after the fact, notice of a dangerous hazard does not equal objectively visible.
So when she testified that both she and her husband, that they could see the ice, it was in the photographs, but yet she stated she didn't see it when it arrived. Is it fair to akin this to that video we all watch where the gorilla is in the the picture, and then after the fact, when you see replay, you see where it's at? I mean, is that what you're trying to say, is that at the time, there was no way she could have noticed this, but in hindsight, with photos and identifying markers, because he circled the items on the photo, is that what you're saying is in dispute then, as to whether it would have been noted at the time?
What I'm saying is that she never saw the ice until she investigated what caused her to fall. And then
but it's easily depicted in the photographs. So is that what the issue is in terms of a factual dispute, that even though it's evident in the photographs, that it wasn't evident in person at the time, that it's, you know, like looking at forensic evidence after the fact?
Your Honor, I would also argue that it's not evident in the photographs. We have testimony, a dispute in testimony of
but
whether
her deposition testimony said she could see it in the photographs.
That's correct. She marked exactly where she fell. But there is a dispute in whether the ice is objectively visible and whether a reasonable person would have seen the ice as they're walking. And all the parties agree that the photograph is an actual or an accurate depiction of the condition.
So pinpoint me to the case law, or which cases you're relying on, that it had to be that specific spot that she walked on as opposed to the sidewalk as a whole. Because there's looks from the pictures, like there is snow, there is ice on it. I mean, does it, because I know there's at least an unpublished opinion of this court cited by respondent, that it doesn't, you don't have to actually know that specific, you know, limited spot has to have ice on it. I mean, is that kind of the argument, that yeah, there's ice around, it's winter, it's 0 degrees, but if a reasonable person would look down and not see ice right there, that is the problem, that makes it not open and obvious? Or can it be more general? I'm on a sidewalk, it's 0 degrees, I see snow, I see ice. I don't know if there's a question in there or not. So you can just carry on with your argument. Sorry about that.
I'll do my best to answer. Okay. The dangerous hazard is what caused her to fall, and that's what's being argued as objectively visible. So I would argue, and I am arguing, that the ice to the left, to the right, that's on the driveway, potentially on the driveway in the yard, that's not at issue. It's the actual ice that caused her to fall, the dangerous hazard, that's been argued as objectively visible.
But there's a lot of other factors. Okay, as Judge Siegel was talking about, there's a snowpack stairs, and she's a Minnesota girl, so you know, you've encountered ice and snow and you're aware of that. Going back to the fact that this was a summary judgment determination, is the factor that she stated she did not see the ice, is that the sole factor that we're going back and saying that gets to be presented to a jury to make a decision?
I think that her testimony would be presented, her husband's testimony, and the photograph that you've all seen.
But I mean, is it in dispute? I mean, what I'm saying is, we have this case, goes in on summary judgment. She says she didn't see it. I don't know that anybody is saying you didn't see it, but we look at it as to whether a reasonable person would have seen it or not. So we take into consideration, you know, the day, the weather, the and even the fact that she's lived here. So that's why I'm trying to figure out what's in dispute, that we could have this go back so a jury would decide the weight of her testimony versus the assumption that a reasonable, ordinary person would see it.
And I really think the dispute comes out when I was asking respondents, president and 100% owner, where he saw ice in the photograph. And that's where I really want to point out, is that it's the dangerous hazard that caused her to fall, that where the dispute is. He couldn't see ice there. That's his testimony, that he couldn't see ice. And I think that photograph will be presented to a jury, and they're going to be asked the same questions of, can you see ice in the photograph that caused her to fall? Would a reasonable person walking down the stairs be able to see ice? and they'll be able to look at that photograph. And if they think like defendant's president or respondent's president and 100% owner, they're not going to see ICE there. And if they think like respondent's president and 100% owner, the only reasonable place for Ms. Wilborn to step is actually where she did, because he marked X's all around the photo, but not where she stepped on. And I think that's the dispute in fact of is whether a reasonable person is going to walk down those stairs and see ICE. And here we have a dispute in testimony with the photograph that everyone agrees is an accurate depiction of the dangerous hazard. And we have a dispute in testimony of whether it's actually visible. I think with this fact question alone, this matter should belong in front of a jury. There is the second step where we have a fact question in the open and obvious analysis. And that's whether respondent should have anticipated appellant Wilborn to negotiate or traverse the sidewalk and encounter the hazard. And in this case, respondent is a home builder and a home seller and a home shower. They're participating in a mass advertisement event at this time, inviting as many people as possible to this home. They have a sign directly out front of the home asking people to stop by and come inside the home. Respondent's employee is opening and closing the home each day. She, on the day of appellant Wilborn's fall, she opened that home, put the sign out inviting people to come into the home. And the question on the anticipation analysis is whether a reasonable landowner would have anticipated that an entrant would have negotiated or traversed the dangerous hazard. So in this case, it's whether a home seller, shower, and builder would have anticipated that an entrant would have encountered or traversed the sidewalk. And I think the fact...
So if you want to help us through this, and I know there, at least in one case, there's some clever language about trying to come up with a distinction between what's just open and obvious, such that there is no duty to warn, and then what's open and obvious, such that the landowner should have anticipated it. So where do we draw that line? I mean, so if we're assuming it's open and obvious, otherwise we don't get into that analysis, where do we draw that line? So that it's like an icy sidewalk, you should have known to be careful, and I don't have to warn you about that.
I think if we follow the Lewis v. Lewis and the Holmick v. Helm decisions, or even the Frimpong decision that was decided last year, the court still had the analysis of whether they should have anticipated it. There was the Baber decision, which found that a landowner shouldn't be responsible for someone who's injured on a hazard that they actually created. That's not the case here. Ms. Wilborn was attempting to look at a home that was for sale. And so if we follow the analysis of Lewis v. Lewis, the Holmick v. Helm, the Frimpong v. Taylor Ridge 26 LLC cases, the court still walks through, should have the landowner anticipated the entrant to traverse and negotiate the sidewalk? And in this case, I think it's an overwhelming yes. At the very least, it's a fact question that should be presented in front of the jury. And overall, we have two fact questions at each level of the open and obvious analysis. There's a dispute in testimony of whether the ICE is objectively visible, and a question of material fact of whether a reasonable person in respondent Creative Homes' shoes, as a home builder, a home shower, participating in this mass advertisement event, attempting to get as many people as possible into their home, should have anticipated whether someone would have negotiated the sidewalk and entered and exit the for sale home. As a result of these two fact questions, I do believe this matter must be reversed and remanded and proceed to a jury trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rodney. And at this point, we will hear the argument from counsel for respondent. You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Van Ryberg, and I represent Creative Homes. The district court correctly determined that the ICE badge that Ms. Wilborn slipped on was open and obvious as a matter of law, and this court should affirm that decision. There's three issues that I want to discuss today. First, just the general open and obvious doctrine as an exception to the duty of reasonable care. Next, what condition is, what obvious is, and then the third prong of that is the so obvious prong. So the doctrine has this sort of ping pong back and forth discussion. First, you have the general duty of care, general duty of reasonable care. That includes a duty inspect and repair, unless the condition is obvious. If the condition is obvious, then there's no duty of reasonable care. It goes back, there could be a duty of warn if the landowner or possessor of land should have a reason to anticipate a harm, unless a condition is so obvious that there'd be no reason to warn a person under the circumstances, the rationale being that no one needs notice of what they know. So I think that when you look at it, analyze it either as a three-step analysis or more of a 30,000 foot view like the Duncanson court did, you still come to the same conclusion that this ice here would be so obvious as a matter of law that there'd be no duty to warn her.
If I could just interrupt for a minute. So why shouldn't we determine that Peterson VWT Raleigh is dispositive here? And how do you respond to Mr. Rodney's argument that this was a parade of homes weekend? And I know this particular home was not a parade of homes home, but it was a model, and your client was encouraging as much foot traffic as possible for a commercial purpose. So now, while Ms. Wilborn was not an employee and therefore maybe compelled by her employment, I mean, your client was trying to do everything he could to encourage foot traffic. And, you know, the same rule, it's like, well, it's 0 degrees out. We've all heard of black ice. I mean, why shouldn't we apply the Peterson, you know, that it should have been anticipated?
I believe the Peterson case involved an employer for right. The defendant who was going there to perform his job, and that's where the livelihood exception comes from. I would say as to, obviously Creative Homes was advertising here. Nick Hackworthy testified, our goal is to sell homes. But the same thing could be said for Walgreens. Their goal is to sell product. Biagi's is their goal is to, you know, sell a dish. So in neither one in Duncanson, or I believe it was Morse versus Walgreens, neither one of those cases was either the Biagi's there or the Walgreens held out to some sort of different standard or higher standard because they had advertised to get people into their front door. So I think that's why those two distinctions on those two cases, as to your question, Judge Siegel, would be the answer to that. And I think when you look at what, going back to how this is just obvious, if it's in fact visible, Judge Werke had talked about this a little bit with Mr. Rodney, is that it's an objective standard. You can't just look at, you know, what the subjectively they may have seen. I think in the Rin case, the injured party there said that she had actually seen the puddle that she saw on, and the court of appeal says no, even though she saw it, someone else might not have seen it, and it's not, it doesn't meet the objective standard in that case. So I think even if someone did not see it before, case law is clear that if you can objectively see it afterwards in a photograph, Spindler case, there's a photograph, I think, of a woman had a whip in a sidewalk, I think she tripped on. There was a picture that showed that. And the Court of Appeals said it was objectively visible. You add that with the second step of the obvious standard is whether the risks are apparent to a person exercising ordinary perception, intelligent, and judgment. She's a lifelong Minnesotan. She's lived here for 54 years. She slipped on ice before. She's well aware that these types of conditions, when it's cold out, 0 degrees, there's blowing wind, some testimony. When you look at all that testimony and that kind of two-step on the obvious prong, I think you meet that obvious prong and it negates any duty of reasonable care. We're not arguing whether or not they should have anticipated. I think the testimony from Nick Hackworthy, he was specifically asked, did you expect people to walk into the front door? And I believe his testimony was 100%. So we're not arguing that the anticipation. It swings back to that third prong of the so obvious, that's the so obvious prong, that there are certain conditions where no one needs to be warned, no one needs notice of what could be there. Konofsky in 1976 Supreme Court case said, ice, everyone knows that ice can be slippery, can be dangerous. And it is a fine distinction. Baver talks about that. And I agree there is that interesting Court of Appeals case is that if it's really, really, really obvious, then there's no duty. But it's a distinction that the Supreme Court has chosen to make. And I think it aptly applies to snow and ice conditions in Minnesota. I think the district court got it right, looking at the undisputed evidence as a whole. And this court should affirm that decision. So unless there's any other questions from the court, I think just in sum that this meets the so obvious standard, an open obvious doctrine. I do think it fits neatly within that standard, and this court should affirm the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you for your argument. And we'll go back to Mr. Rodney. Would you like to give a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may go ahead.
The one thing that I want to reference is the restatement of torts 343A, comment F states that once you get to that anticipation analysis, it's not just not a duty to warn, but a duty to warn the invitee or to take other reasonable steps to protect them. And that's what we're asking here, is to take reasonable steps in this case when you're inviting a mass amount of people, is to simply put salt down, make sure that's ice free as these entrants are coming, as you're inviting them as many people as possible. That's what we're asking here with the anticipation argument. And there really is a question of fact of whether they should have anticipated. I think it's an overwhelming yes. Mr. Van Rybeck also admitted that he's not arguing that, as the defense respondent's president stated that of course he expects people to go in there. And in addition to that argument, that the so obvious prong is part of that first step of the open and obvious analysis. And there has been the Baber decision, which was when someone fell on something that they installed. There has also been a planter that someone walked into, a low-hanging branch, someone skydiving a lake, or the common instances where things are so obvious that a landowner should not anticipate them causing harm. That's not at issue here. This is a slip and fall on ice case. We have a dispute in testimony on whether the ice is actually visible. A jury should be able to look at that photograph and determine that. And then we have a dispute in whether they should anticipate the care. And I just want to affirm or reaffirm that this matter should be reversed and remanded and proceed to a jury trial. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court and we'll issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. And the end of this argument also marks the end of our oral calendar this morning. The court will now recess to consider its non-oral cases. And you may all leave the Zoom platform at this time. Thank you so much.